Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Matters, the show in which I discuss all matters of the mind, in which I show how much mind matters. Welcome to part 44 of Control Your Brain, Control Your Life. I am Udo Staatskuchler and I'm live on air. You can call in at any time with questions and comments on the subject I'm talking about. If you have any questions, comments and suggestions not related to the subject matter, please go to my website http://www.mindmattersonline.info. Mind Matters Online is one word. There you will find my email address and then you can write to me. I will reply within 48 hours. The same, of course, applies also if you cannot get through with your calls to this show. On my website, you will find also the last 20 or so recordings of my show and a link that directs you to the Blog Talk Radio archive, in which you will find all my shows, old and new. Last week, once again, I could not finish what I had talked about when I ran out of time. I had talked about the modern woman and her place in society and in the family and the challenges that this brings, and I said that in this struggle women became very successful in their chosen careers. I also said that paradoxically this success is another explanation for the decline of women's subjective well-being. The success that women had in the marketplace, in addition to managing and taking at least emotional responsibility for the running of the household, increased their level of stress. Being successful in their careers, bringing up children, taking care of household, and having also social life, of course, gave them also the perceived need to be a superwoman. And I pointed out the downside of it, and that it was very often not only women's emancipation, but more than that, an emasculation of the male partner. The traditional role of the male being pater familiae, the ruler of the roost, the hunter and gatherer, the sole breadwinner, slipped away. He no longer was the alpha dog, but had to share this position with his female partner. Not only that, but oftentimes this role was reversed. The wife, due to her increased bargaining power, took over. She became alpha, and the man was demoted to beta. It was not so long ago that this kind of scenario was unthinkable. The man staying at home and caring for the children, unheard of. Children's stuff, shopping, cooking, cleaning is woman's work, and the man goes out and brings home the bacon. Times, however, have changed, and more families experience shared roles. And also completely reversed roles have become more frequent over the past decade or so. Still, society attaches a stigma to reversed roles and to a lesser degree also to shared roles. What effect does this change have on the emotional well-being of both men and women, as well as on family life? Sometimes, not a lot. The partners arrange themselves, alpha and beta position, move freely from one to the other and back again, depending on circumstances. Equilibrium, a balance of powers, is assumed. A blissful and happy family life is the outcome. The personalities and character traits of the partners play, of course, a very major role in this kind of arrangement. But what if both partners are ambitious and goal-seeking? What if both are assertive and decisive? What if both are risk takers and dominant personalities? What if the male partner failed in his business, whether it is through his own fault or not? What if he had lost a job because of illness? What if her personality is not of the caring and nurturing kind? What if he feels frustrated because of any one of these circumstances? What if she feels frustrated because he cannot assume his natural, in inverted commas, leader role? What if she feels ashamed of her partner, believing that with each household task he assumes, his masculinity fades? What if this makes him less attractive sexually to her? What if she meets a man who has all the attributes of an alpha male? What if he meets a woman who has no other ambitions than pleasing her man? What if there are children? What kind of role models do the partners present? Surely any one of these scenarios presents a challenge to a meaningful and loving relationship and can be the cause of unhappiness, and subsequently the relationship might end. Can this challenge be mastered? Can a loving and meaningful relationship survive happily these circumstances? The answer is yes, it can. The key to it is change. The couple individually need to change their perception of their circumstances, learn to be happy about it, and project the happiness also to the outside world. The first steps in the right direction are cognitive and require that the couple has to draw clear lines of responsibilities regarding children, financial matters, and household tasks. They need to communicate the concerns frequently, if possible even daily. They need to encourage one another and remember the reasons for the role reversal. The house husband needs to find support also outside home, whether through other members of the family or perhaps even a support group. The partners need to emphasize with each other and appreciate their respective tasks. They need to become not good, but excellent communicators. To achieve the best possible outcome, satisfactory for everyone concerned, this life-changing step requires careful planning, a change of perception, and a change of previously held beliefs. Now, let us move on. One more step further regarding the empowerment of women. And before you think that I see only negative aspects of it, let me emphasize this, that this is not so. I am 100% for emancipation and 100% for equality. What I am concerned about is the change over period, the time we experience now. We are still not comfortable with the new situation. That is, society is still not comfortable with the new situation. The pitfalls of it are still there. Everything will come right, I'm sure of that, 100% sure, but it is not yet so. And as long as it is not right, as long as society as a whole has not internalized the new culture, relationships can and will suffer for it. This leads me to taking another step further into the empowerment of women, or rather the self-styled liberated women. Metaphorically speaking, they have burned their bras and now they are liberated. They have gained many freedoms that were previously not acceptable for women. They can ask a man for a date and they can be the one who proposes if they decide to do so. As I have said before, they can pursue their own careers, and many have proven that they are quite capable of leading as well as following. They can drink beer straight from the bottle, go to male stripper shows, smoke cigars, and use any swear word that they want, wherever they want, because they are indeed liberated. They worked hard for it, they have earned it. And no one should deny them what countless generations of female gender have struggled and sacrificed to accomplish. And I mean every word of it. However, in the eyes of many, if not most men, and indeed in the eyes of many women, none of this makes them necessarily attractive, desired, wanted, or pursued. In fact, doing so actually makes them very unattractive in the eyes of most men. They may say that they can live without men and who will not readily accept their attitude. That's fine. But they must realize that they have narrowed the field of men down to a very small minority. Furthermore, any willingness on the man's part to give in to a woman who goes beyond equality and really wants to be in control may be more out of their desperation than any kind of true acceptance. For my female listeners, this gives you some insight into the workings of the male's mind. You see, few males would ever demean a woman who has done well in her chosen career, well, as long as this doesn't happen on his turf. Apart from this, most men, I'm sure, enjoy women in all shapes and sizes and with all of their liberties as well. But they are absolutely turned off and disgusted when women feel that they can only relate to men with an attitude that used to be male to men. Much like the gay male who overdoes his femininity with flamboyance and exaggerated camp, view a female who is overly aggressive, overly manipulative, demeaning, and indignant in much the same way. Nothing is more attractive to a male than a liberated woman with a balanced attitude that is genuine and considerate. There is a category of liberated women who revel in denigrating men for their supposed cluelessness. In truth, this issue has less to do with any difference between the sexes and much more to do whether or not one is going to be a decent human being. There are many women who complain about men not being romantic anymore. However, this works both ways. How can a man be romantic with a liberated and self-centered woman? Could we not say that a truly liberated woman is the one who is liberated from herself? In a perfect world, liberated women would be less aggressive and good men would be much more understanding regarding how to treat a woman more as a person than as a prey. Those couples who are enjoying a truly mutually fulfilling relationship are doing so because they have worked at developing balance, understanding each other, and relearning the simple truth that all of us need to be treated as valued human beings if we are to love truly and feel genuinely loved in return. The world isn't perfect. Then again, each of us has the ability to readjust our thinking so that we can bring both maturity and understanding to our own primary relationships. Either that, or we'll just have to adapt to being unhappy and very much alone. May every woman experience nothing but the right to be free in every way and do well in whatever they attempt to do with no man-made obstacles to have confront along the way. That is your right, and that is what your foremothers worked so hard to accomplish for you. All I'm saying here, that some of you are obviously making the mistake of becoming exactly what you have historically hated in men. Don't be a bitch, and if you are one, don't blame it on men. Take responsibility for yourselves and be our friends, our companions, our counterparts, equals, lovers, and partners. You'll be a much happier person, and so will we. There's yet another reason that indirectly can contribute to troubled relationships, and that has to do with materialism and consumerism. The fact remains that even though our Western industrialized world experienced enormous economic growth over the past 50 or more years, our happiness has not increased, and some people even argue that it has decreased. Crime rate has increased substantially during this period, and even though it has been on the decline over the past few years, it is still much higher than it was 50 years ago. The income gap between low and high income earners has widened, and the gap is still widening. The worldwide recession ongoing since 2008 has put doubt on our economic model, which emphasized materialism at almost all cost. Have we sacrificed on the altar of materialism the pursuit of higher pleasures, such as pleasures of the intellect? What about our family life? Most importantly, the upbringing of our children. Do we really want them to follow us in the rat race? What about our friends and life in the community? Are there too many must-have goodies, toys, trinkets, and other things on offer? Does this availability of such goods stimulate us to want more and more and more of them? Many of them are designed to make life easier, but in order to obtain them, we have to work longer hours to be able to afford them. Does this make sense? I believe that the time has come to change our focus and to find our own level of financial comfort, and then to say, this is enough, and to direct our focus from acquisition of goods to other happiness-inducing activities, like family, socializing, or whatever higher value activity can trigger your happiness or can increase your level of happiness. Everyone wants to feel significant. This is part of our human nature. But I think that a majority of the people in our culture seek significance in material success, the accumulation of wealth, rather than being successful in other aspects of life, for example, seeking knowledge, taking care of one's emotional, physical, and mental well-being, bringing up a family, enjoying life's daily pleasures, small and great ones alike. I said bringing up a family. What I should have said is bringing up and enjoying family, making the family the central point in life to the exclusion of most else. But most people, most couples, have not come that far, and therefore relationships will remain in danger of becoming troubled. I have seen marriages breaking up of people who once were deeply in love, and now they are pitted against one another in a divorce court and throwing dirt at each other. At one time, they had worked together to achieve what they had dreamt of at the beginning of their relationship, a nice home, financial security. And now they are at each other's throat. The one trying to get as much money as possible from the other one, and that one defending what he or sometimes she believes to be hers. I assume that some of you have been through this and or have seen it happen with other people. How is it that people who were once lovers, who cherished one another, who could not keep the hands of one another, how is it that they managed to become adversaries, even enemies? Well, there are hundreds of reasons why marriages break up, and I mentioned only very, very few. As I said before, more than half of all marriages in the industrialized world break up. Most of them are acrimonious and end in fights. And the average length of failed marriages is just 7 years. There's always heartache attached to a breakup, more so when children are involved. And in many, if not most cases, there are serious financial considerations or even hardship. Come to think of all that, would it not be better to call it quits on relationships, whether they are marriages or only cohabitations? Fact is, however, that almost half of all married couples stay together and, as research suggests, some of them, many of them, are really happy relationships. Others may muddle along. Some may not be very happy, but they all are getting by. Research also suggests that unhappy marriages can lead to unhappiness in general. But happy marriages are indeed great sources for happiness. Almost everyone who enters into a partnership, be it marriage or cohabitation, does so with the very best intention to make it a lasting relationship, a relationship forever. But as we know, there are many pitfalls, and if people are not aware of them or know how to avoid them, they will fall into them. Sometimes, as we all know, it is better to get out of the relationship or marriage, split and get divorced. Sometimes both partners have come to the agreement that this is the best solution. Should this be the case, then a divorce is much easier than in other cases. One can assume that both parties have agreed how to divide their accumulated wealth, and then the divorce is just a formality. Sometimes it is only one partner who wants to end the relationship and the other one wants to carry on with it. This has happened quite a few times in my practice. Once I have assessed the couple and I find that the one who wants to end the relationship is adamant to end it and won't budge, then my advice to the other one would be to let go. Stop fighting what's unavoidable and begin a new life. I know that this is easier said than done, but it is the best solution for all concerned. A good counselor or therapist can help to overcome the shock of the separation. Then, of course, there is a problematic ending of a relationship when children are involved. I have oftentimes heard people say, stay together for the kids' sake. Even relationship counselors have said so. I am opposed to it. That is to say, I am opposed to it when there is a complete breakdown of communication in this relationship, when love, trust and understanding are gone, and when all that's left is only animosity, hurt and disappointment. I have counseled people who grew up in this kind of relationship. In fact, I bet you that many, perhaps most clients of psychotherapists have this kind of family background. Can you imagine what a child is going through growing up in a household where there is spite and animosity between parents? Where this animosity is expressed with arguments, with shouting, mudslinging and finger pointing? Where there is perhaps even physical violence? I can tell you that this child goes through trauma after trauma, which will significantly affect his mental well-being, with all the consequences. And if these traumata are not treated, there is a likelihood of some anxiety disorder developing. And there is also the very, very strong likelihood that this person's relationships or marriage will follow the same route. How could it not? After all, he or she has learned from their parents how to behave in a relationship. So let us say a relationship comes to an end and a marriage ends in divorce. What then? First of all, those who refuse to allow the breakup of the marriage to destroy them will find that this ending is also a new beginning. It may take time to get back up again after being knocked down so hard, but it can be done. The emotional, familial, and financial challenges may seem to be overwhelming at first, but Time has a way of working things out for those who refuse to give up. There is indeed life after divorce. Secondly, it can be a time of growing, stretching, and gaining needed insights. Instead of allowing anger and bitterness to be the end result, the better road to take would be a new determination to never allow oneself to make the same mistakes again. However, this is not to say that any consideration of another long-term or permanent relationship should be considered as one of those mistakes. The better conscious choice would be to realize that there could very well be someone out there with whom you could enjoy a happy and fulfilling relationship for the rest of your life. Still, it will take time to heal before you are ready to find the next special someone. At any rate, don't let the demise of your marriage defeat you as a person. Those who learn from their divorces are more likely to succeed in finding love again. Thirdly, think clearly and rationally. As I said before, hardly ever ends a marriage where only one of the partners is to blame. I have had many individuals in my practice who had been married before several times. I can remember one of them was 3 times and another one 5 times divorced, and both of whom said that they were without blame for any of their divorces. In both cases, it was always their respective wife's fault. Well, that's what they said anyway. Strangely, both said that they were too good for their wives. Don't be like those fools. Even if your errors only amounted to 5% of why the relationship ended, take responsibility for it. I told you in previous shows that you are responsible for almost everything that happens in your life. Your failed relationship is also your responsibility. You were there. It happened on your watch. You could have done something different. You could have prevented something to happen that did happen. So take responsibility. If you don't, you will carry the same misconceptions and the old baggage into the next relationship. They will become the seeds that eventually can destroy it as well, unless you decide now to get a handle on them. Instead of spending the rest of your life blaming the other person for all of your sorrows and woes, go to work on correcting your own issues and then get on with life again. Taking responsibility for your own failures will make all the difference if you truly want to be happy again. This is not to say that you have to berate yourself for the failures until the end of time. No. Accept your responsibility. Accept that you also failed. Resolve that you have learned from your mistakes. And then move on. In a different context, I have said in a previous show that forgiveness is essential. Therefore, forgive your ex for his or her failure. This might be harder to do than even going through the divorce, but you see, if you don't forgive him or her, you will harbor bitterness in your heart. That bitterness will affect you emotionally, mentally, and even physically if you don't get it cleansed out of your system. As a result, instead of hurting the one it is aimed at, it will end up damaging you instead. Not only that, but no one wants to hear a divorcee going on and on and on about the ex who has been such a disappointment. That kind of ongoing conversation comes from a heart that is bitter and cannot begin to heal due to an unwillingness to truly, truly forgive. The best thing you can do for yourself is to truly forgive and then go on with your life. Move on. It is the relationship, the marriage that has ended, not your life. Life goes on, and those who are determined to survive go on too. It's a horrible experience. In fact, it can be absolutely nightmarish. To those who hold on to the anger and bitterness, it will be worse than death. There's nothing sadder than a living person with a dead soul. However, those who treat it as a new beginning, a time to grow, and who take personal responsibility as well as forgiving their ex-mates, will find that life can be fresh and sweet again. Life is for those who live it. Get on with your life. Move on. Again, this is easier said than it's done. But here are a few pointers how to deal with your own feelings and emotions. I said so before, there are a few things more difficult than concluding a relationship. What began with mutual attraction, followed by excitement and joy, became over time uncomfortable somewhere along the way for at least one of you. Whatever the reason was, it was enough for either one or both of you to come to the conclusion that breaking up was the only thing left to do. And that hurts. And then there will be also the feeling of guilt. If you are the one who is initiating the breakup, you will experience some guilt, perhaps even a lot of guilt. To be the one whose decision it is to conclude a relationship is a very difficult position to be in. In fact, you are actually rejecting the other person. That being the case, be sure that you handle the breakup appropriately. If he or she is a jerk, then deal with it straightforwardly. However, if the other person is simply someone who doesn't match what you are looking for, but has done his or her best to be good to you, and perhaps even loves you, you will need to treat softly and be as gentle as you possibly can. In order to exercise these feelings of guilt during your breakup, take time to remind yourself that it was much better to break off the relationship now than for it to get any more seriously troubled. There's only one way to break up with someone. Tell it to him or her in person. If you are not married, but are still in some kind of loose relationship, then some books and websites encourage the use of devices such as electronic greeting cards or an email to break the news of your breakup. A short message. Nah, it takes courage to confront someone face to face with this. Using an electronic medium is not only insensitive, it is heartless. You're merely postponing the inevitable as well as losing whatever shred of respect the other person had for you. If there are extenuating circumstances where you have had to deal with some real problems that are behavioral or extremely upsetting, then there will be no nice way to say goodbye. You simply have to do it and get it over with. However, it is simply the ending of a mismatch or the winding down of a once loving relationship, then you will need to honor what you two have shared together by ending it well. Perhaps you could arrange to meet at the same place where you first met or had a date together. The symbolic significance of your relationship having come full circle will not be lost on both of you during your breakup. It will demand of you a solemn but caring demeanor as you begin to break the news. You might start out by recounting some of your history together. Don't limit this to the difficult or bad moments that might have contributed to your decision, but share the good times as well. Women take such news with extreme emotions, almost a kind of shock followed by tears. Men are usually stunned and will begin asking you for some logical reason why you have decided to do this. There is a time delay of about 5 seconds before the brain registers the grim realization that whatever you once had, the moments you enjoyed together, the wonderful experiences you shared with each other, the times when you would whisper sweet nothing into each other's ears, is all gone, gone forever. So this is how it ends, not with a bang, but with a whimper. Then comes the realization. They say that all good things come to an end. Perhaps your relationship was a good one for a long time and then just wound down to this point. Maybe it was a hot, torrid, quick love that exploded with every raw emotion there is. At any rate, the other person is about to realize that it is indeed over. At this point, most people go into denial. Now comes the 9 words you really don't want to hear. You can't leave me. Or I can't live without you. And then the begging. I'm sure we can work things out. Give me a second chance. This is a moment when you will either stand your ground and go through it with it, or give in, and then probably have to face all of this again in the near future. Keep your cool. Don't allow yourself to fall apart. Keep the serious expression and continue to reassure him or her that it is over. If she wants to sob for a while, that's fine, let her. If he wants to be frustrated or confused for a moment, that's fine, let him. However, when enough moments have passed, you will have to take the initiative again to end the conversation and say your final goodbyes as a couple. In the case of an unpleasant and harsh reaction, you might simply have to leave or ask the other person to leave, if this is appropriate. On the other hand, if your relationship was basically a good one and you know he or she loved you, and perhaps still does, a kiss or a hug would be okay as long as it stops there. Life is filled with many different types of goodbyes. This is one of the most difficult ones. Remember, should you be the dumper, you have had time to deal somewhat with your own emotions in preparation for the confrontation. The other person just got it full blast. Be patient if they do not respond well and be considerate of their feelings. Being the dumpee is a horrible experience, but one that all human beings experience in their lives. Now, simply say goodbye. Life is like a bed of roses, beautiful but full of thorns. Directly after the breakup, it's okay to feel sad. It's all right. Get it out of your system. Let the tears flow. At this point of time, life looks indeed bleak. Some people take over a year to get over the best of lost loves. What's the point in that? Reframe what happened to you. Give it a different meaning, a meaning that is very positive for you, and then get on with your life. You could say to yourself that this breakup enables you to play the field again. You could exacerbate the little idiosyncrasies with which your ex-partner used to slightly annoy you. Play them up in your mind and be happy that you no longer need to suffer them. There are many things you can do to make your being single again as a wonderful and great opportunity for yourself. Under no circumstances, see your ex in his or her full glory and being at the best behavior. Realize that someone out there is getting on with their life too and is about to meet the love of their life. And this could well be you. Oftentimes it can happen that your partner and you want to agree to give it another try. This typically happens if the relationship was a very good one at one time and something happened that became more than just troublesome. It happens also if there are children to consider, or if there are very major financial considerations, or whatever other circumstances there are that seem to make a rekindling of the relationship advisable. Before you decide to go any further, take some time to give this some very serious thought. Use the time to give yourself an emotional break. Ask yourself if it is likely that the relationship becomes again what it once used to be. Perhaps after the dust has settled, you will be thinking more clearly and recognize the futility of starting over again. However, if after thinking it over carefully and considering all that is involved in your particular situation, you still might want to get back together again. The choice is yours, as will be the consequences of your decision. Breakups are so difficult because you invest an enormous amount of time, caring, sharing, and love into the relationship. But sometimes it's time to move on. And this is indeed a good point to end this program. Thank you for listening. Go to my website, mindmattersonline.info. Mindmattersonline is one word. There you will find my email address, and I would very much welcome your comments and suggestions, as well as any questions you want to ask. If you have a problem you want to hear my opinion about, you are most welcome to let me know. I will reply to all my emails within 48 hours. For now, I leave you with words by Maggie Richard, and I quote, "Two words, three vowels, four consonants, seven letters. It can either cut you open to the core and leave you in ungodly pain, or it can free your soul and lift a tremendous weight off your shoulders." And these words, the phrase is, "It's over." Tune in again next week, same day, same time. Goodbye.